Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is poet, photographer, and poetry editor of Cultural Weekly, Alexis Roan Fancher. And she's here to talk about her latest published collection, The Dead Kid Poems. Alexis, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you.
This is a tough book of poems, and you are noted for writing tough books of poetry more than any other person I think I've ever talked to. But this is particularly tough. Now, this is actually a companion volume. Talk to me about that.
The first half of this, or the other piece of this book, is a chapbook I wrote in 2015 called State of Grace, the Joshua Elegies. And it was written over an 8-year period after my son died.
Can you tell me about, can you talk to me about his, how did he die?
He died at the age of 26 from a rare and almost always fatal cancer called an epithelioid sarcoma. It was 18 months from being diagnosed to just wasting away. A terrible death.
And for the first time I saw in this book, there's a photograph of your son. And I think it wasn't until I actually saw that photograph that I finally got a sense of the reality of this. And, you know, obviously my heart goes out to you still. And this is a book that's not just about the loss of your son, but it's about other losses too. Talk to me about that.
Well, as I kept living after my son died, and now it'll be 12 years in September that he died, my perspective changed. My life has changed somewhat. I'm older. I have a different view of what happened, and I've also expanded my view. I look at kids dying all around me every day now. There's a school shooting. Every day there's somebody. I live in L.A., and it's a crazy place, and every day if I turn on the news, which I try sometimes not to, I find, oh, this kid was killed. There was a gang shooting over here. The police killed an innocent guy over there. Some guy opened fire on the police, children dying of overdoses, children just dying. And then, of course, there's my niece who has been dabbling with drugs for far too long and has made my sister's life a living hell. And I talk about that, too, with my sister's permission. My sister says if someone can learn from all of this, God bless them.
So, And I want to talk to you about that because this is so intimate about what has gone on with your sister's daughter.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of awkward to talk about. Did you run the poems by her before you published them, or is she just naturally okay because she trusts you?
Well, both.
Okay.
I've been writing about my sister and relationship for a long time. There's a whole series of sister poems. But about 2 years ago, she started contacting me about how to deal with what was happening to her daughter. And we texted furiously daily for a very long time. And I started turning those into poems with her permission always. And when the book came together, I got her permission not only to write the poems and to publish them, but my publisher wanted to make sure that she was okay with me even putting her first name in there, you know, the dedication to my sister, Deborah. And she had to sign something that said it was cool. You know,
that sounds like a nice publisher.
Lovely publisher. Lovely publisher. Claire McQueen, Kaiso Flash, publisher in upstate Bellingham, Washington. Great publisher, number of great publications, and a journal that comes out, I believe, quarterly.
Do they publish mostly poetry?
Poetry, flash fiction, and a lot of different forms, guzzles, haiku, haibun, tanka. Very interesting, very eclectic publisher.
Now, getting back to the Dead Kid poems, and I want to encourage readers and listeners. It may sound like, oh my God, I don't want to pick this poem up because I'll get depressed. You don't. And that's sort of an interesting thing to say, that I didn't find myself getting depressed. I may have gotten angry, especially when you when we'll talk about your poem before about all the kids dying. But I also found, and I wanted to ask you if this sounds like it's an okay reaction, I actually felt I got educated. Oftentimes when people have friends who have children, offspring, or other members of the family who have died, you sort of don't know what to say, and you're often bumbling around for the wrong things to say. And by pouring out your inner state in these poems, I really felt like, God, now I'm starting to get a glimmer of what the hell you went through. Just a glimmer, because I cannot possibly understand it, what you went through. But does that sound like a sane reaction to these poems?
Yes, and one that pleases me greatly, because part of what I wanted to do was to share what really goes on when someone,
right,
a child dies, and what happens with the family. You know, the euphemisms, oh, he's in a better place.
Oh, God, I hate that. I'm so glad you wrote about that. I would want to punch a person that told me that.
Well, you do. The one that resonated for me was my hairdresser, 2 weeks after my son died, asked me if I was over it. That's in the first book, and it's entitled Over It, and it was published in Rattle several years ago. But, you know, people are clueless, sometimes heartless, sometimes just simply thoughtless. But educated isn't a bad thing to get from this book. Thank you.
It's also an understanding of the kinds of things that can set off your emotions that you would never imagine as a person who's not part of this. For instance, looking at other people's Facebook pics of their kids, TV ads. And all of these are addressed in poems in this book. And it's not until I read those poems that I go, of course, that makes total sense to me. And I would feel that way too. I mean, there was a sense of empathy. And again, I can be only empathy to a certain level. But it's that kind of thing that people don't ever get until somebody writes about it.
Well, once it's pointed out, you know, it becomes, well, of course, you know. But until then, people sort of go on their merry way and write about, there's their kid, and he's doing this, and he's doing that, and not know how it lands.
Now, really, being an artist, what writing poems like this, is there any kind of therapeutic, cathartic effect of writing poems like this? What does it do to get it out of you and onto a page? I know, it's a tough question.
It's not so much therapeutic, is almost a kind of purging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something happens, and as an artist, I have a reaction. Here's an example. A couple of days ago, in the mail came, and I'm holding it right here. I have not opened it yet. Official jury summons enclosed for my son, who has been dead 12 years, whose death certificate I have sent at least 4 times to the Superior Court of California, Office of the Jury Commissioner. And so there's a poem. There's something I'm going to let, you know, sort of stew up and then write about. So, yeah, there's a momentary lessening of everything, but then new things happen, and you're back in a different mode, like a writing mode. I mean, I thought when I wrote State of Grace, that would be it. And now I've got the dead kid poems, and now I've got a jury summons. So there you go.
When you read your poetry from this and your other previous book, there must be audience reactions from people who have gone through either similar situations or know somebody who's gone through similar situations. And they obviously want to talk to you like you're a therapist. How do you handle that?
Because it's gratifying to see people in the audience reacting or crying or, you know, and coming up to me and asking me. Mostly the main question you get or I get is, when does the grief stop? When, you know, and everybody's grieving. Everybody, I mean, whether it's a parent or a child or a sibling or a friend, people die and people react to that. And it doesn't end. It changes. Grief changes. It morphs. It reappears. It lies dormant. And then it tsunamis right. up at the most inconvenient times, like when you're watching a commercial of a bunch of little curly-headed boys that remind you of your son. And then it's like being stabbed in the heart.
Could I ask you to read one of your poems? And then I'd like to hear another one later on. But let's hear one for the benefit of the audience who are wondering what we're...
My choice or from...
Your choice. Always your choice.
Let's see. Images on TV. I'm going to read one called Residuals and Elegy. You are a channel, surfer between here and eternity. You are canned laughter, talisman against dead air. You shield me like white noise. You are pilot and then disappear. Even now, I watch for you, find you in infomercials and serial dramas where you are always an episode ahead of me. You are the choke in my reality show, a rerun of tears. You, sweet boy, are the canceled series. You are the remote. Last night, the same commercial, a boy's first haircut, soft curls, sheared, floating. He could have been your understudy.
You're listening. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is poet, photographer, poetry editor of Cultural Weekly, Alexis Roan Fancher. And we're here talking about her latest published collection, The Dead Kid Poems. Alexis, have you been writing these all along? In other words, these are poems from over a long period of time?
These are poems that have been written post State of Grace.
Oh, they are.
So that would be since just a couple.
Yeah, I was just going to say because we talked about that book. So this is just a couple of years. There's a poem in this book that after I'm reading all this, and I really enjoy your work on a lot of different levels. Most of it on its honesty level and sometimes on its brutalism level of the way that you deal with stuff. But there was a poem here that actually took me aback. It's called Accustomed to Dead Kids. Now, the thing that took me aback about this is, as you said in the beginning of the poem, this goes to the tune of I'm accustomed to your face. And the problem or the challenge or whatever, here it is. I'm in this really deadly serious poem and I'm singing it to myself sort of semi out loud. And it was the weirdest thing to experience, Alexis. It was like, I'm reading this like amazing poem, which I thought was in retrospect, was like, holy crap, is this a great poem about something that concerns me? And yet I'm sitting there, you know, in a chair singing this to myself. That was wild.
Kind of creepy, huh?
Creepy. Yeah. It's creepy, but it was sort of creepy. You hate to say funny, but it was creepy, bizarre maybe. And the funny thing is everybody who's going to do who reads that poem is going to do the exact same thing. It's like really throwing a time bomb in the middle of this book.
Thank you.
I knew you would thank me for that. But what an amazing idea. Talk to me about the generation, because you alluded to this before. This is about all the school shootings, all the stuff that we've just grown numb to, children dying, and it's happening all around us. And as a person who's gone through decades, I can't remember another time when this has affected our society the same way, where it's, okay, another school shooting, turn the channel.
It's almost gotten to that point. I think I just turned on the TV to catch the morning news, and there was another horrible shooting. And I looked at my husband and I said, I've grown accustomed to dead kids.
Jesus.
And he said, wow, there's a poem, which he says occasionally when I say something profound and I don't know it. Joking. I sat down. I went in my office and I sat down in front of my computer. And I have a background in music and the arts. I was an actor and a singer long before I was ever a poet. And I love musical comedy. And My Fair Lady is one of my favorites. And I thought,
God.
I wonder. And I looked up the lyrics. You know, the Lerner and Lowe lyrics, and I thought, I wonder if I could write accustomed to dead kids in exactly the same meter, the exact same cadence, everything perfect. And that was the challenge I gave myself. And I wrote this, and usually a poem takes me forever, okay, weeks, months. I wrote this in 3 days. And sent it out, and no one wanted to publish it.
Oh, it's sardonic. It's like you don't get sardonic a lot, and this is sardonic. This is like it. And my other reactions later on down the line is, I hope it's turned into a music video. I just flashed on pictures of you at the piano with a candelabra, and. And singing this song with flashing to different newsreel footage in the background as it happened. And at some point, I think you need to do that, because this is pretty.
I love that interpretation. Friends of mine who are big in the DNC sent it into the DNC, you know, so we'll see. And I have to say that last poetry journal published it, you know, with you know, those people are very brave. So here's a shout out to Glass for doing that.
it was, and where it is in the collection is really interesting, because as you know, you're following your journey and your sister's journey through your poetry and stuff like that. And all of a sudden you get to this. And like I said, I'm of that age where this song is incredibly well known in your head, and you can't help but singing along with these lyrics. And I think this was a really powerful piece. I thought it was pretty brilliant.
Thank you. Well, you do remember that it is a love poem.
Yeah, I remember.
It's a love song in the original, you know.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. But now I can't get this one out of my head.
I know. That's good.
Now we're going to run out of time, and I still have other things to talk about. Can I ask you to read another poem?
Sure. You don't want me to do dead kids now? You want me to do something else?
It's totally your choice. Like, that's a lot of pressure, man, because it's one thing to ask a person to read a poem. It's another ask a person to sing live on the radio. So I almost want to leave that, and people are going to have to pick that up. I think that's worth the price of admission alone. People should be buying this book just for that. And then I'm going to wait for the video to come out, because I swear this has to be made into a video.
Well, thank you. All right, I'm going to read one that I know you really like, called Unsolicited Advice to a Facebook Mom. Stop plastering the site with photos of your strapping boy on the cliff of manhood, pitching a no-hitter, practicing guitar. Don't publicize his tuxedoed beauty posing with his prom date, or family jaunts to look at colleges for the fall. better to shield him from happenstance, mistaken identity, the evil eye. Protect him from what you won't imagine, a drive-by, a street race, an overdose, a dare. Pass an egg above his body while he's sleeping. Make the mano fico over him with your fist. Sew small mirrors into his clothes to reflect misfortune. Tie a red string around his wildness. When someone gives him a compliment, spit over your shoulder 3 times, then touch wood. Stop flaunting your boy's shining face, his sweetness, how he still lets you kiss him goodnight. Listen to me. Like you, I was once besotted. Don't tempt the gods.
That really struck me. As a person who's both a parent and a grandparent, that there are times when you know other families around you where disastrous things have happened, and you feel like it's almost like you don't want to enjoy stuff too much because it'll be cursed.
Well, I mean, there's that feeling, and then there are people who are totally oblivious. Shortly after my son died, I went on a small weekend vacation with 2 good girlfriends of mine, one who's childless, the other who had a boy maybe 6 years younger than my son. My son had just died, and all this woman did was show videos on her phone of her son. Here he was climbing a mountain. Here he was in Europe. Here he was over here. Look how beautiful he is, Alexis. I mean, it was just, people can be oblivious. And on the other hand, you know, their kids aren't dead. So why should they even think about anything except their live and beautiful children? It's just an alternative reality.
Yeah, but I would argue that it's also being a little bit sensitive to the people around you when you know that that's happened. I mean, come on. That sort of seems like a basic thing. It's like, don't be an ass about this. You know, it's that's like eating, you know, let them eat cake. It's like eating a thing in front of a Thanksgiving dinner in front of a starving person. I mean, it's a cruel thing to do. Before we run out of time, I want to give a big shout out to you as a person who really does a lot promoting the poetry and the whole everything that goes on with that in the LA area, because through things like Facebook and stuff, I have actually learned so much about the poetry and poets of the LA area thanks to you. And by the way, your incredible photography. You really work hard as promoting the poetry scene there.
Thank you. I like to think I'm sharing what so far seems to be a huge secret, that there are poets here of international stature. Everyone from Brendan Constantine to Suzanne Lummis. I mean, Cecilia Wallach is here. Just brilliant poets. And it's my pleasure to share and to broaden the scope of people on the right coast, you know, about people on the left.
It's incredible. For me, it seems like there's a never-ending supply of poets out there. It's like every time I go into your Facebook, there's another poet that I still, you know, and then I have to look up their poetry. It's incredible. Is it that LA attracts that many poets?
It must be the weather.
I think so. So poets, especially as they get older, really get soft and don't want to go to New England, so they decide to go to LA.
Well, this is why I don't go to AWP, because it's always in the winter and it's always cold.
Now, the other thing I want to mention and give you a huge shout out is your photography. And what's happening with your photography? Have you had any book offers, any shows?
No and no.
Oh, Jesus. I find this so hard to believe. You have a series of portraits of poets, which are just outstanding. I've never seen the like in any other part from any other part of the United States. They're just amazing photography, and I so much want to see those exhibited in a museum.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I have to say that the photography for me is a pleasure, and the poetry is work. And I've been so focused on the work that I have not promoted the photography. It's sort of an incidental. I mean, it always appears in my books, but I'd really like to, maybe starting next year, start really focusing on promoting the poet photography and also the street photography. But
and that seems to be a whole other.
I need an agent or a producer or somebody. You know.
Well, I want to talk to you about your portraits of the poets that you do, because those aren't just off the cuff. I mean, you do photographs of them reading, but you have more intimate portraits of poets where you actually are working with them like a classic portrait photographer. Are poets happy to be photographed like that? I mean, you get in there and you get a sense of who these poets are from your photographs.
Well, I'm channeling my inner Dorothea Lange, you know, and looking, I have a photo studio here in my apartment. I shoot with a very fine Nikon, and it's all very professional, and the lighting is great. And I would like to say I have a style.
You do.
Very simple. I'm looking to photograph what's missing, what's not shown, the inner life of a
person. That's what I'm saying. I get a sense of who these poets are. We're completely out of time. And we could talk forever. I want to talk more about your photography. My returning guest tonight is poet, photographer, and poetry editor of Cultural Weekly, Alexis Roan Fancher. That's Fancher. And we've been talking about her latest published collection. It is powerful. The Dead Kid Poems. Alexis, it's a pleasure as always.
Thank you so much. Delightful. Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.